but if that light goes.
So that they may be employed or something, or you know, some other kind of wording, fine, but they can juggle the words without changing the intent.
Okay. And I guess the second area was in the beginning of the paragraph, for the purpose of creating a heterogeneous community at the site if designated by the voters as the location of the new capital. Apparently they were recommending if any is designated by the voters as the location of the new capital. So if you say yes, say if any is.
That are within the municipality, as well as directly the centers that are not?
I would would not attempt to make an interpretation, but it's my impression that it's directly with municipalities, and they would be responsible for dealing with the centers within their jurisdiction, and then directly with centers who are outside of municipalities. This is the impression I have.
So if you had a center within a municipality, you'd have to somehow get in touch with the municipality.
The contract then is made with the municipality, and then they in turn make contracts with the centers within their jurisdiction. And that's how the bill was submitted from the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and I wish they were here to help get explained.
So do I.
It's clarifying.
It's one action to the year. Are there any other questions of Mr. Wright? Mr. Hackney, Mr. Paul?
Just a comment for you. I don't have a question.
I have a question.
Mr. Paul?
What difference does this make now in the arrangements that we passed last year? Am I correct in understanding you that last year the municipality only recommended, only said, okay, this daycare facility is acceptable, right? Then the department contracted directly with the daycare facility?
No, that isn't the way it worked. The Department of Regional and Community Affairs did establish and has established contracts in several municipalities. And then those municipalities in turn have, I guess, subcontracted with centers where the service is actually provided.
Well, my question perhaps is clear. You look at line 15. It says that they would, in the existing version, it says, do you have a copy of the bill?
Yes.
If you look at line 15, the existing version apparently says it would be contract with the daycare facility. Now it says it's contract with the municipality and daycare facility. Is there a change in that? They're going to have a two-step process now instead of a one-step.
That is not the impression I have, but again, I think it would be best if that department clarified
if this is a CNRA bill, and CNRA isn't going to speak on it, and the Health and Social Service witness is not really qualified to speak on it, has to get to the stage of the way they got to tell us about it. Because it looks like you got questions. It's unfair to ask this young lady to answer.
We are under the impression that it's clarifying legislation, and as such, we're
in. Yes, one more question.
This
may be answerable. I think you did comment. On page 2, the age portion, lines 21 and 22, page 2, what is the difference between mandatory school age and boys not reach the age of 7? What is, except changing the wording, what are we doing?
Why
are changing the wording?
Apparently, a number of people do not know what the mandatory school age is. And by putting in age 7, a number of
Oh, yeah. It's difficult to believe that people don't know what the mandatory school age is out there.
Well, I thought it was 6.
It is 6.
No, it's 7.
Is this the only person we have here on this bill today?
Yes, we're going to bring it up again. Ms. Monroe is not even from the department concerned, so
okay.
She's not the appropriate one.
Well, then I would second the motion to lay it on the table until they show up.
Is there objection? House Bill 562, thank you very much, Bob. Mr. Adams. You see, we're making the optimum use of it in the last 8 days, 9 days.
Good. House Bill 562 has been introduced at the request of the Division of Corrections by the governor. This is an interstate compact which presently is in operation in 18 states at this time. It's been introduced in five other states. This was at the last report we had at the end of 1974, so I don't know what action was taken on by various states during 1975. This is a compact that has been developed by the Council on State Governments, and it would permit the various jurisdictions that are signatory to this compact be able to send offenders from one jurisdiction to another. For instance, let's say that we have a man that comes up here from a member state, let's take Nevada, and gets into difficulty up here in this state. His intent is to return home. He is going to make his parole plan in that jurisdiction. His family is there and so on. We could then contract with the state of Nevada and send a man down there where he could do his time. The other way it could work is, for instance, if an Alaskan is outside, gets into trouble, and he wishes to return to his home state to make his parole plan here, and is going to be living here, his parents are here, family or something, he could then make application and we could then receive him in this state under the terms of this compact. The other thing that it does is it allows the various jurisdictions to take advantage of specialized institutions that might exist only in one area. I can think of some facilities, for instance, that might provide services for the mentally disordered offender. It might be for a sexual psychopath and so on, where we don't have a specialized institution or facility to deal with these people. It might be available in some other jurisdiction and we could send that person there. The other things that it does allow, if the case should ever come up, it allows the various states to share in cost of building a specialized facility in some jurisdiction. This bill also provides for the cancellation and repealing our interest in the Western Interstate Corrections Compact. And the move has been throughout the country to eliminate the sectional contracts and go to a contract that would cover the total United States.
Are there any questions, Mr. Adams? Mr. Carr,
I'd like to repeat first. You did say this is one that's recommended by the Council on State Governments.
Yes, sir.
Uniform legislation. This would mean, I assume, Mr. Adams, if all the states signatory to this, we have to adopt the compact in exactly the same way.
That's correct.
I have two other questions. One, does this have any cost implications? If we were to do the kind of thing you're talking about, we have a prisoner who we send out board out to the state and all that, and vice versa, and so forth. We're doing the same thing now for the Western Interstate. There's no real cost differences.
All right, what we do right now, we have contracts with federal government to take care of our prisoners, and we also take care of federal prisoners, city prisoners, and borough prisoners. And the procedures are now that we charge the federal government, the Fairbanks, the city of Juneau, or borough, anybody that we're doing business, we charge them on the basis of the average daily cost. In other words, what does it cost us to keep an offender? We pay the Federal Bureau of Prisons for any offender we send out their average daily cost. So I would say, yes, there would be costs involved. However, I think the advantage might be to the state, since we have more people coming in that would be eligible to go out than we have people coming back into the state.
One last question, Madam Chairman. In the compact setup for correction, whether it's the Western Interstate or this new interstate, which I presume could include all 50 states.
Yes. But
are there also some general basic ground rules as to treatment of prisoners through the economy? Well, so we know we sent a prisoner out, the last one out, there was some place.
Yes, by the terms of compact, he had duly constituted authorities in the state parties in the compact that have to agree that that the care, treatment, and so on and so forth must be up to the standards and so on.
Of the sending state.
Right. Of the sending state, he's entitled to all the benefits, rights, and privileges that he's received within this state. So that, and also that we have procedures set up covering transfers of inmates now, where they must go before the classification committee. He has a right to appear, to present testimony, and so on. so that there are necessary due process procedures in a building to the transfer of prisoners, which have been recently upheld by our Supreme Court.
Mr. Adams, when we were sending, as I recall a few years ago, when we were talking about our emotionally disordered offenders, mm-hmm. we were talking about having a new wing of API and this type of thing. I want to ask about that later. But as we sent him out, I remember Massachusetts was one of the cases.
It was in Illinois, as I recall, when I came here.
Indiana.
Right.
Did that mean that we utilized the Western Interstate Corrections Compact
to
legalize it?
No, it was a separate contract between the state of Alaska and Indiana, as I understand it, because the state of Alaska does have the authority to enter into contracts with other jurisdictions, not under the terms of this compact. But we could go out and negotiate right now a contract with Georgia, who happens not to be a member of the Interstate Compact. We have that authority in our statutes now.
Now, the interstate, though, does expand our relationship with the state.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We have to just continue. Does it mean that a number of the Western states are withdrawing from the interstate and are going into something which is uncomprehensive?
Yes, this has been the move right now. I don't know. I haven't contacted the other states, but I noticed that, for instance, the state of Washington presently is a member of the Interstate Compact. It's been introduced in Oregon. So I would say I know my dealings with Interstate Compact was primarily getting one started in New England, and the recommendation there was to get rid of it and to go to the Corrections Compact and use that standard throughout the country. Because it's subject to challenge in court. If you've got a basic contract or a basic agreement, rather than five or six separate agreements, it certainly is going to be much easier.
My last question would be, did we ever affect a change in API to keep some of our people, and then ask about how many of you are outside the state?
Because I don't have anything to do with API, but presently they are modifying one wing of that institution to handle a mentally disordered offender. I don't know what their capacity is or is going to be. It hasn't been opened as yet. Right now, from the Division of Corrections, we have approximately 35 individuals outside the state. Now, these are people that are under a criminal sentence. They've been found guilty of a crime and have been sentenced. However, some of them have been found to be suffering from a mental illness. And they would then go to the maximum security hospital in Springfield, which is under jurisdiction of the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And I think that last time we had six. Now, if the person is found to be not guilty by reason of insanity or incompetent to stand trial, in other words, he has not been convicted of a criminal offense, he then comes under the jurisdiction of the Division of Mental Health. They have a contract with the state of California, and they place people at the Cascadero State Hospital.
Thank you.
Now, is this going to be with all the states?
It could be. It would depend if, as I say, there are presently 18 other states that have adopted the compact, and it's presently, at the end of 1974, it has been introduced in five other jurisdictions. Now, this would give us, this would be the basic document. Then we'd have to go and negotiate an individual contract, let's say, with the state of Washington and say, okay, we'll take people who are residents of the state of Washington only. Only people that are between the ages of 18 and 26, only people that are left-handed, or it's going to cost you so much for a day. The individual contract would still have to be negotiated with each jurisdiction, with each state, but we would have the capability of contracting under the terms of the Interstate Compact with any state that is a signatory to the compact.
Well, you, back here on the last page 9, section 3, it says as soon as this is enacted, then that will, in 2 years, this other Western state will be dissolved in our
force.
Mm-hmm. And we're pretty sure then that we're going to have contact with these. Right. There's been any familiar with them? With this center?
No, we have not used, we do not send any offenders to any other.
No, I mean as far as going to, which states will be taking part in this contract?
No, we have not explored with any other state at this point. possibility of contracting.
Well, what about this amount here?
It's in terms of developing the capability for contracting, as we have, I think, a number of people coming in recently into the state from other jurisdictions.
But then without, you don't have any, no feelings on anything in regards to...
We haven't explored...
Well, why is this done before this is done?
Well, it's in terms of getting the authority, and then we can go ahead and contract with the individual jurisdictions. It's pretty hard for us to go out and say, are you interested in contracting us, when we don't even have the basic compact adopted.
It would be hard for them to find out if they would be interested. You're going out now and...
I think that, you know, my association with other people in the business, that yes, they'd be agreeable, as we are to, for instance, taking federal prisoners. If they're residents of the state, we sit down that they must be residents of the state, and I think other jurisdictions would be, at least those I've dealt with in the past have been.
How many states are involved in open prison in Western states?
I think there are six of them. Well, I have to go check the statute. So it's just...
But it is necessary to dissolve that before you...
No, it's not necessary to keep both on the books, but I know the attorney had prepared this for submission. Did he feel it was necessary to have both on the books?
Well, I think I'll tell you, at least you can contact with the overseas, bird in hand, bird in the bush.
We're not sending anybody to other state jurisdictions this time. All of our people have gone to the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
That's all for now.
Following Mr. Olson's question, I believe I'm just corrected it. That last section Mr. Olson referred to is, does give the state 2 years before this Western Interstate membership lapses. And the two-year period is your lead time for making your connection with other states, correct? Right,
that's necessary.
Yes,
sir. Institutions for prisoners. The idea is to provide within the facilities, those where space is available at the present time, a program which would utilize the labor that presently is in the institutions. The bill, in addition, provides that the commissioner will administer the correctional institutions program, may use, equip, and maintain buildings for the purpose, and purchase materials, and so on. It provides that the institutional industry's products, whatever they may be utilized by other governmental agencies and by nonprofit corporations. There is created also a correctional industries revolving fund for purposes of funding the operations. And I think one of the most important sections is covering the disbursement of wages. Under the action of this bill, the offender would be paid the regular wage or minimum wage, from which would be deducted the cost of services that he required, such as his board room, the cost of administration of the program. He could also be caused to support his family, pay restitution, or any other bills of the term that necessary and proper. I think probably Alaska, I guess if I remember correctly, is about the only state that doesn't have a correctional industries program of some sort. And I think that I've had a great deal of resistance to correctional industries programs over the years from the way I've seen them operate in other jurisdictions and have operated them. in too many jurisdictions, they have been used simply to provide a means and a way for the state to gain revenue in order to defray the cost of their institutions. And I think that that's probably the focus and the function that maybe is wrong. I've seen license plates factory, in fact, been involved in manufacture of license plates, where the offenders earn 10 cents an hour. And I don't believe it was useful or gainful employment. Usually the shop foreman had to keep four men for every job in the place because he was afraid one was going to get paroled, one was going to get locked up, one was going to get sick. So he had to have three for every job. So actually, in my judgment, you're always teaching three people how not to work. And what I see in terms of this bill as it's been introduced and I hope will be passed, is it would provide a financial basis to gain the respectability and accountability and responsibility of the offender, where he paid the minimum wage, and yet it's not a free ride. It turns that he is going to have to pay for his support. He is going to have to pay for the services that he utilizes within the facility. I think that it offers the opportunity here for us to do something constructive within the institutions. I think you can only watch so much television and read so many books. And I think that there needs to be a program within the facilities that teach an offender, you know, that he has a responsibility to maintain himself, just like you and I do on the outside, that we have a responsibility to care for those people that are dependent upon us. And I think this is the first step in this direction.
Mr. Adams, I've just received a message that the commissioner has an updated position paper. I'm not sure on which of these two bills. He's asked us to hold up the meeting for 5 minutes. So just cutting it off short, I'd like to declare 5 minutes for the
meeting. All right, good. Maybe hours if we prepare.
You are in favor.
Can we just chatter about something, Mr. Adams? Thank you.
Tomorrow is at a blacked off. This morning is blacked off. Tonight isn't. Tonight, November 30th, after this. And then I'm through. But tonight, I'm wearing once and for all.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, there's no changes in terms of the position of the department, the division. I think it was in terms of some of the cautions that we had with respect to the bill, perhaps, are identified more clearly. The other section of the bill I'd like to call to your attention is that under this act, prisoners employed in correctional industries are prohibited from participating in collective bargaining and joining a labor organization so that they will not come under any union at this point. The other identification is in terms of definitions where correctional industries products are all services, goods, wares, merchandise, which would cover agricultural products as well. We feel it's a step in terms of being able to put the institutions on a more cost-effective basis, provide worthwhile, productive employment within the institutions, and be able to have the offender be able to assume responsibility for some of his expenditures, as well as for those of his family as well.
Mr. Adams, has this been flown with either the private businesses which now supply the state, which might find this in competition, or with the labor unions which might find it in competition with the state?
No, it hasn't. Not to the best of my knowledge at this point.
If the prisoner happened to be eligible or mending the child support, would that come out of something like this, or if he were had a tremendous backlog of child support?
He could. Yes.
Would he have to give permission for
it? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Adams, I'm assuming that one of the primary reasons for this is that the prisoner may not have had a skilled trade or some kind of occupation, which you earn a living with. One of the benefits of this would be if you would learn to do something with which you can make a living outside, and obviously making license plates is much of a private market for them. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, I think it's a faulty assumption. It's one that's generally made, and I think one that's generally used to sell an industry's program. And it's been my experience over the years that there's a very poor correlation between a trade learned in a prison and using that trade after release from the institution. If a prisoner's learned that trade in the institution, it's usually the last thing in the world he wants to do when he gets out. It's in terms of it reminds him of what happened. Correctional industries and training programs are usually quite a distance behind the private sector. The private sector, if it is doing similar work, usually has its own training program and wants to train the people in the ways that they do business. So I would say there's pretty small correlation. I remember being experienced there in terms of one place where I was at where we had probably the best print shop in the state. We were dealing strictly with maximum security offenders, and the average sentence was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 years, so that they had ample time to learn the trade. We had a well-equipped shop, and I would say I'd be hard-pressed to go find a man today that was using the trade that he learned in prison today. I think it's a faulty assumption, but I think it's a basis on which many of these programs are sold. I think the most important thing is in terms of telling the man to go to work at 8 o'clock, get done at 5 o'clock at night, you have an hour for lunch, you get paid a decent wage, you have an opportunity to advance, to earn more, the better job you do. There's a satisfaction here in terms of completing the task, getting your paycheck at the end of the week, and then you make some decision. Okay, some are already made for you in terms of you've got to pay your boardroom. Well, I have to pay mine. They be in the way of a mortgage or go up the grocery store, he has to pay his. One of the other things that we're moving away from is what I like to refer to as forced rehabilitation programs. You put them on a voluntary basis, and I think it would be much more beneficial. And we see men taking programs in the institution, I think, for one purpose, perhaps to get out, rather than really to obtain a skill or a trade or anything else. And what I would see as a result of this being able to accumulate a little money, if he wants to take a course in welding, learn how to be a welder. All right, then there's the opportunity for him to plunk down his $60, take the course, it's money out of his pocket. There must be something to stimulate that man to put down that money rather than just, you know, to keep him busy in the evening or something. Here he really wants to take it. He's putting his money in. It's, you know, I think would be much more beneficial than it would be for the state just to provide it for him. Say, we hope he'll become a welder when he needs.
How many prisoners are we talking about we have in the state of Alaska now?
We have...
Under this program?
Under this program, we estimate that we have about 600 offenders presently in the system or adult offenders. Of those, about half of them are in unsentenced status. They're waiting trial, waiting appeals, and so on. So I think when we figured it down, we had about 120 that would probably actually involved in some type of a work program.
120.
Yes.
What did you tell me a while ago the cost of keeping the prisoner will last? $46?
$29 a day. Is that our average cost last year?
Mm-hmm. $29 a day, and that's, and you say 125?
Well, we have about 600 right now total in the system. Well, we have about 120 that we could consider on this program.
How many of these people would be working? All of them or none of them?
I would say to start off with, we've estimated about 120 that could be involved in this type of program.
100. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Any
talking about $600,000 worth of wages plus their board and room that's at $6,000 a year. We got a lot of people in Alaska that outside of that prison that doesn't make $6,000 a year. Free board and room at $29 a day. Kind of pays to go to prison. I got a lot of people in my district that don't make $6,000 a year. And we don't pay them.
Did I understand you to say that they would reimburse the state for the cost of the board and room?
Yes, that's the idea right now. It's free board and room, and we want to charge them out of their wages.
That'd be a savings to the state of $3,600 a day. So it really would be a cost effective for them.
Well, they make $112 a week. And if you charge them $7, if you charge them for seven at $29 a day for their cost, I'm not sure what your, those kind of, your figures don't add up. Because if you pay him $112 a week, how in the world is he going to pay you $29 a day? No. See, he'd make $22.40 a day, and you charge him $29 a day, then he's in debt to you $6.60 a day. He goes in debt to you every day.
Do you respond, Mr. Rex?
Yes. Right now, he doesn't pay anything. And this bill provides the commissioner to charge up to the full cost of care per day, so he could set the rate depending upon the wages the man earns.
Well, we pay him a minimum wage. At the minimum wage this year will go to what? In Alaska, $2.80. The federal government raised 30 cents, so we raise accordingly. $2.80?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
He said it.
Oh, read your line, page 3, line 10.
It said they shall be paid in here somewhere. I just read it. What is he paid? Minimum wage.
Can I read page 3, line 10?
Under no circumstances may less than the minimum wage be paid for those services.
Yeah. What? Read it somewhere before that.
Commission shall establish a salary structure for the prisoners employed in the correctional industry in accordance with the prevailing wages for similar services performed in the community in which the correctional institution is located. Under no circumstances may less than the minimum wage be paid for the services. I can't read anything else into that. Because
I think you two gentlemen are not in disagreement. Mr. Swanson is saying that they're going to make at least the minimum wage.
Right.
Swanson's point was also, I thought, though, that the minimum wage that the prisoner can have to pay for his cost to keep being kept, right? And all I'm saying is, now, I presume if you're going to be making notebooks produced by state departments and the prevailing wage that kind of work in Palmer, let's say, in Eagle River, say $5 an hour, you would pay the prisoners $5 an hour for that work, is that correct?
Yes.
Now, you cannot, in any case, pay less than what you $2.80, I think, now. Statement on wage, but you would normally pay $5.
You have to pay. We can't, in other words, we can't put private industry out of business. The advantage is in terms of putting the inmate to work in useful labor, in a useful work situation, which will allow the state to collect and defray part of the cost of keeping that man in the institution.
Mr. Olson?
Well, regardless of the wage, that is going to make a difference if it's paid or not. Because all we do is take it out of one pot and put it in another.
Yeah.
And so what's going to determine is going to be this product that finished product or what he's selling.
That's right.
That's what's going to determine whether he's making this paid his way or not.
Right.
Whether you're paying $10 or $20 an hour, doesn't make any difference.
It's in terms
of that's coming out of the state.
It's in terms of furnishing.
And so all they're doing is putting this pot in right back.
It's in terms of furnishing the product to the state.
So it's just whatever they make. It was worth $29. He makes that out of that grand day.
Well, certainly.
But, Mr. Farr?
Well, unless I'm misunderstanding something, the prices on these things that are made are set by the Commission of Health and Social Services. Now, not by the buying agency like the Department of Administration or the Department of Attorney, set by the Commission of Health and Social Services. So he's the one that sets the prices, and I presume he's going to sell them to cover the cost of that labor, which might be $5 an hour, or whatever the price happens to be.
So he has to pay the minimum.
I know that, but if he can set the price higher than that, if he wants to, too, right? If the guy in Eagle River is working on making these notebooks, he's getting $5 an hour. The Commission of Health and Social Services figures $5 an hour when he charges the Department of Administration for those notebooks. He doesn't figure $2.80 an hour, he figures $5 an hour.
Yes, I know, but it's still on the product he's making. What he's selling it for, what it's sold for. How much are you going to work during the day? How big a production are you going to make? But talking about whether he's going to pay his way or not.
Yeah,
that doesn't bought us a home. Because he can make something really sell for a dime, it take him all day.
That's what I'm saying, the commissioner of health and social services sets a price, it won't sell for a dime, it'll sell for a quarter.
So I'm saying that, well, this is what the, it's debatable, it's more or less, whether this was in paper's way, it isn't. It's not.
Or no, this isn't gonna pay its way.
It's not even coming up, it's all close to us.
Again, Madam Chairman, if we go to the minimum wage, which paid on the local level, I might have, we might have somebody in the operating engineers just running a lift fork somewhere, and that's $12 an hour. So we can't pay that man that's running around in this factory that we're gonna have inside the prison walls. We gotta pay him at least the minimum, whatever it is in that community, might be $12 an hour. How are we gonna dip into our treasury? If we just took the simple $5 an hour at $40 a day, is $900 a month. Instead of the little bit that I have computed here on the minimum wage, at $112, we've got the wages of now as a prisoner for $900 a month, and that's a, times 12 is a fairly nice amount. We're talking about $12,000 a year to go to jail. We're gonna have them all inside instead of outside.
Mrs. Ostrowski and Mrs. Green.
Well, I have a number of questions. I hope we can clarify all this, but Red, it does say the prevailing wages for similar services. It doesn't say everybody in this program is going to be paid the wages that we can spend.
This is why we use the minimum wage of $5 rather than be anywhere from $2 and 80 cents an hour now in Alaska to $12. So I took a $5 figure because there are very few people in the community that works for less than $4 or $5 an hour. A little bit. We have a few jobs in Alaska that still pays the minimum wage $2.80, but there are darn few. So even if you use the minimum of $5 an hour, you use $4. That'd be $160 a week. Times 4.5 is a fair amount when you're in jail. And we would have to dig into the treasury. We're talking about now we got the wages up to 3.5 times. We're talking about 600,000, $1.2 million, $1.8 million. We're talking about $1.8 million now in wages for those 120 people.
But Mr. Swanson,
well,
those people will be making a product that will be sold. And if a cat skinner is worth $12 an hour, I don't think you're gonna have any cat skinners, but if a cat skinner is worth $12 an hour, I'm sure you are, but whatever that cat skinner produces, the state can sell. And whoever hires you at $12 an hour, whatever it is that you produce, that person can sell for to cover your salary and then some. And there's no reason why the state can't do the same.
Agreed. But we are limited unless we make a fantastic investment in a prison facility. We're limited to what you can do in a prison.
Exactly.
Where we, the garden, make belts, make some hats or some, it's really completely a limited product. And I don't think that we could recover, I don't think we'd recover 10 cents on a dollar in product.
Because you're thinking it would be a large capital investment?
Well,
the bill sets out that the commissioner will use equipment, maintain buildings, machinery, and other equipment which may be necessary. It says you can use it, but it's not, saying that you can go out and make huge capital investments.
Well,
it's not anticipating that. And really, in a lot
just
of
bring
you know,
the point out that I think
it's
that
a
the stuff they bought.
Taken, but I think there's, this is considered in the bill. And in some of the prison facilities that we visited, they do have considerable,
facilities.
They have them where they
woodwork and that kind of thing.
Sure, and so those are already existing. I think what the bill is doing is existing things and turn them to a profit. And it's not going to be a big profit to the state, whatever the cost to the state in terms of paying that man a salary, whatever the state has to spend on that, they can expect to recoup a good part of that. Maybe they can get that profit too by selling that product later. And if it can be done in the Mr. Hatton's.
Well, I just made my point here. The stumbling block of the bill, Madam Chairman, is where's the $600,000 going to come from, or the $1,800,000 of wages for prisoners? Now, that's a stumbling block in the bill.
Of course, now a lot of that will come right back. So until a man is making $29 a day,
consultant services?
Mr. Adams, men is making $23 a day. Will all of it go to his room and board, or will he be allowed to keep a little bit?
Under the terms of this, it will be an amount determined by the commissioner. Now, he may set the rate. Right now, what we do if a man is on work release for instance, he's out working, making $10 an hour in the community, we charge him for his boarding room 1/3 of his net earnings up to the full cost of care. So if he is out working, making $10 an hour or $500 an hour, he would pay $29 a day for his board and room. Now, if he's out in a training program, making $50 a week as an apprentice in terms of training, he is paying 1/3 of his net income to the state for his board and room. It's based upon his net earnings. This is what my recommendation would be to the commissioner at the time that this was set up, to take a percentage of the net earnings to cover his full cover his care at board and room up to, but it cannot exceed, what it costs the state out of pocket to keep that man in the institution. Now, we're talking about some of the services that are being provided. One, a couple of the experiences I've had, one is printing. Now, the state does a tremendous amount of printing. And as I understand, it's difficult to find people, keep and maintain employees and what have you in the printing places that we have, duplicating printing for the state and so on. This doesn't require a huge space. The physical equipment is available and so on. Another place we're involved in is in terms of making road signs, stop signs. I don't think there's a sign in the whole state of Alaska that doesn't have three bullet holes in it. These are some of the things that we've been thinking about, the possibility that you could get into signs that are presently made in the highway department by state employees. Is this a job that could be done in the institution? The guy's sitting on it. He's sitting in the institution, and it costs $29 a day to provide television, reading, welding courses, educational courses, all these things for him. And it's our feeling that he should work and help defray some of those expenses. And the system, what we think is best, is to give him that paycheck and turn around and take it over here, where he recognizes that it costs you something to live in this world, that work is worthwhile and produces a reward at the end of the week, and if you want a service, pay for it.
Mrs. Ostrowski still has quite a few questions.
I'm impressed with the idea, and I do like the sound of that. I wanted you to explain to us, I'm sure this isn't breaking the ground, and you've had experience in this before, so it isn't a totally unrealistic plan, and what kind of things, you just cited some, what kind of things have been done in other states, and I'm sure you must know, that have been workable, that haven't put the state in the hole, and
right here in Texas it's cotton.
Business. Pardon me?
In Texas it's cotton, but I don't think we have the potential here for raising
textile
cotton.
Textile, you mean?
Pardon?
Textile, making it.
Yeah, they're having factories, and they have cotton fields and so on. Brushes, one of the products we used to be involved in was the big highway sweeper brooms. They're very difficult. I guess, I don't know whether there's anybody in the state that's able to put the bristles in those things. That's one of the things we used to do in the prison. Brushes, brooms, clothing, leather goods, textiles, shoes, all sorts of things. Printing is a big issue. License plates, signs. These kinds of things have done in the personal industries throughout the country. Now, it has been a move, and we came pretty close to pulling it off, where some of the major companies in this country are now being concerned about crime and prisons and so on and what they're going to do about it. And I had contact with one of the big companies in the country. They were interested in coming in and giving us a product to manufacture for them. It was more of an assembly job. They'd send the parts in, we'd assemble them in the institution, and they would pay, so much to the offender and to the institution and everything else. For assembling these parts, which then they could market. The problems we ran into when working with this particular company is I recall that their parts were manufactured in New York State. And when they looked at the possibility of shipping these up to be assembled here in this state, the cost of transportation was prohibited. They couldn't charge enough for their product to be competitive with other people in the market. But this is going on. Kodak, for instance, is one company that's been quite active in the institutions in New York and Rochester, in terms of coming in, setting up an industry, hiring the inmates, paying them, and then realizing the goods that they're producing. Their advantage, I think, in terms of, you take it, the adult camp, where we have right now in Parma, we have two or three good metal buildings that we've put up. We've actually put them up ourselves. We have a sawmill like this. One of the big things we used to do was to steal logs and posts and so on for the highway department jurisdiction. These are other things, wood products. How many picnic tables do we need? And other facilities at the camping areas in the state. Why can't they be worked on during the winter while the inmates are in the institution? Why can't they be built there? I think there are a number of different products.
I think it was implied in here, but certainly the departments of state government could contract for certain services along those lines.
Yes.
If they might find it more feasible to do it that way than to order them from Seattle or California.
That's correct.
Well, that makes it sound pretty logical.
Mr. Happy, Mr. Swanson, Mr. Osley.
Well, Madam Chairman, as a card-carrying Chamber of Congress member, I do have some problems with this, and I'm sure that they're not new to this area. I'm sure they've been running through them in other places. There is a very definite area of competition with light industries. And the state of Alaska is in tough shape as far as the civilian market goes in the way of small industries. I happen to work for a company in Fairbanks that peddles kitchen cabinets. And I just would mortally hate to see the prisoners in the state of Alaska doing old G. Hackney out of a job by making kitchen cabinet components with some woodworking material and machinery that we couldn't afford as a civilian firm. This enters into it. It's a very real part of this thing. The other thing is, I'm reading the position paper here, and it says it's well that the section on wages states that under no circumstances may an offender make less than the minimum wage. Well, are we talking about the minimum wage, or are we talking about what the bill says, which is the wage for that area? There's a vast difference. The bill says, in accordance with the prevailing wages for similar services performed in the community. Well, what if there are no similar services performed in the community? Does that take you back then to minimum wage?
Yes, that's the way I would see it.
Like the signs, though, if they're presently being made by the state, are you saying that you would have to figure out more or less a cost of what it now costs the state to make them up, and that would be the prevailing wage?
No, I would say that, let's say that those signs, let's take Fairbanks, there's no sign shop in Fairbanks where they can produce stop signs, the types of signs that we might be making. I don't know whether there is or not, but let's assume there isn't. Then I would say that we're free to establish any price we want, because the only place where you can obtain signs from now would be in Anchorage and a sign shop, and that's not the local community. And I would say then we could charge any rate we wanted. I think this is a protection for, all right, your cabinets are made at the corner of Cushman or Six or whatever it is, that we could not come in and start making cabinets if you're paying your cabinet makers $10 an hour. We couldn't come in and scab those out at $2.80 an hour and put you out of business. And that, to me, is the intent of this. And I think it's going to require a great deal of imagination on the part of whoever is running the industries program to search out those areas that are not in competition. Now, we provided meals for the SOS schools in Anchorage, for the children on base, out of the Eagle River kitchen. We had men hired that were doing the cooking, provided the meals, and were being paid for it. However, before I would sign the contract, or even permit them to negotiate the contract, I said, you contract everybody that has the capability in the Anchorage area Did you give me a statement of the fact that you have been unable to secure these services, or anybody wants these services, you know, or any other company wants to do this? And they came back with a statement to us saying, you know, we don't have the capability within our school kitchens, and we've contacted XYZ Corporation, and they are not interested in performing the service. Now, we did it on a short-term basis for 1 year. There was no flack from any other food service business and so on. But I think that's the kind of thing that is going to be required. I can remember when we started work release programs, there was a fear on the part of industries that we were going to be putting inmates into their factories at the minimum wage, and they were going to fire the guy that had been there 20 years earning, you know, a great deal more money. And it required a great deal of work with the labor unions. And, you know, I had to go in and say, look, these guys are going to be members of the union. They're going to be paid scale. They're going to, I said, the only restriction in terms of them, I won't allow them to go to the union picnics. But anything else, you know, if there's a union meeting or anything else, they're going to be there. And, you know, it took a lot of work in terms of getting work release programs started throughout the country, but I think they're pretty well fixed. Industries programs traditionally have operated in a very narrow sphere. I think with unrealistic, I think that they, I really, as I say, I've not been an advocate of an industries program until I see that we had the advantage here, the opportunity to really move in a positive way to it, rather than to turn our license plates at 10 cents an hour, and I say that across the state, I think a bundle of money in most jurisdictions.
Just one other question, and I'll defer, but I noticed in the disbursements section, you've allowed money to be taken up to pay the state for room and board.
Mm-hmm.
You've allowed for cost of administration.
Mm-hmm.
You've allowed support for the prisoner's dependents.
Mm-hmm.
And you've allowed the purchase of clothing and concert.
Right.
But, Mr. Commissioner, nowhere in here do I find anything that says, that speaks to restitution to the victim. Now, would you consider
it? I sure would. In fact, I have the AG to write it in there as one of the conditions. That was my recommendation.
I'd like to see
Chair would entertain the amendment.
I think that's important.
I do too. I bet you don't have much argument on this.
I'm under Section B, Mr. Hackney, the only thing it does say that the Commissioner may, with the consent of the prisoner, pay in whole or in part the pre-existing debts of the prisoner. And of course, the only thing there, if he's got restitution, as I see this, the Commissioner can't say, you will pay. And he has to say, do you want to pay?
Although that really wouldn't be a pre-existing debt, I don't think. I mean, that wouldn't, the any victim wouldn't be considered a pre-existing debt.
Well, if it was at the time of the sentence, he may be able to pay restitution. He might have had it in terms of placed on probation of credit, you know, restitution, then gets violated and comes in the bucket, he's still got his restitution case.
Did the AG have some language that
he said? No, he never put it in. I asked him to spell it out. This is the form it came out.
May I get that language, Kevin? We don't want to pass this off today.
I think I'd like to see a fiscal note, but I don't believe we have one.
No, ma'am.
I'd just like to add, on this debt part, but also if Mr. Hackney goes to prison and he owes me $100, and he's making money, and that's about a grocery bill, then part of this, he would have to pay it. As he goes, and I thought the idea of this was trying to get them back into the swing of what they do on the outside, and that's probably raising it on the inside, is because he's definitely
he ran up to the victim. I think that should be that part should be looked into, or that they would be.
I have the restitution figure.
Well, that's the restitution thing of the way I understood Mr. Hackney, I'm sure is that the reason for being in there. Because that is something sort of that. But I'm thinking about now the bills that he would owe.
I would personally place a very high priority on restitution. That's something that I don't think we will address as a society anywhere near the degree it should. I've just been reading over that report that's given to us on the operation of the
Yeah, just a couple of remarks to Mr. Hackney. The victim here, Mr. Hackney, is the taxpayer. Reimburse the victim would be the taxpayer. Another note, another little couple of figures here, $112,000 a year. If I murder somebody and I get 20 years to get off in 10 years, If I'd worked real hard and learned to trade and made a few bucks, I could get out of here with $120,000 in my pocket, not too bad. But Madam Chairman, now, before this bill goes any farther, I sure would like to see a real sincere fiscal note on it.
I think a lot of your fears will be allayed, Mr. Swanson, and I think we need to grasp.
I hope that the fiscal note also tells us what effect this will have on our unemployment rate in Alaska.
Ms. Clark.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to ask.
I got an extra.
What, the last response?
Well, I thought you.
No, I just.
Keep that in.
Oh.
Tell them.
Can you grab it in front of Mr. Swanson? Mr. Clark really is in a long time, can he have a quick one, then I'll get back to you for the rest of yours, okay? Mr. Clark.
Well, this is really a simple question. Mr. Adams, is it your judgment that the products made by and in such an industry such as the printing or the road signs or whatever could be then sold to the appropriate state agency at about the price the state agency now pays for them commercially? Or would you see them as probably going to the state agency somewhat more cheaply or somewhat more expensively? Or what would be your?
My feeling is they should go on a competitive basis, so that if we can't be competitive with what the state can buy, I don't think they should. In other words, if they're paying $12.50 for a stop sign, they should not be forced to pay industries $13.50. In fact, industry should be competitive in terms of being able to save the state money in terms of its product itself.
In other words, the cost of this in terms of his road signs or printing, et cetera, that the state might buy from the industries would be roughly the same as they've been paying all along.
I think it should be less on a competitive basis, and I don't think the State Department should be forced to buy something simply because it's produced in a business.
Okay. Madam Chairman, that's
Mr. Ross.
I have to.
You're right.
Then just on that same, I was going to bring it up, but prices will not be determined by or taken upon within the bidding. And also said the commission will set the price. But now, is this these products, one that we have read this bill to be more or less for individual products, not a productive line. You mentioned that with license plates wouldn't be feasible. You see, to get on the signs, you say would.
I would not make a judgment whether license plates are or signs are. We have not done an economic, survey to determine whether it be signs, whether it be road signs, whether it be license plates, whether it be printing, or whether it be toothpicks at this point. You know, we've got to go out and determine what is the need. What are we looking at in terms of local competition? What's the attitude of the union, the public, and so on, before we can get into any of these programs?
I don't see it here, but mostly it says they're going to have individual things that they're needing themselves. But has there been really any, no type of program that's really been formulated?
No, yes.
And it's, yes, there are.
There are two or three things that we've looked at, and one of them is in terms of printing. I think that's one of the things that is feasible. The other is in terms of supplying some of the equipment that's used there in roadside parks and camps and
I would think that we have some type of program, because again, like you said, with printing, that's an expensive venture in itself. So with printing, you still have to have some little know-how and what type of persons are going to be? Is going to have someone in there for 3 months?
It all depends upon the type of industry or the work program that you've got. You've got, I'm sure, in any, let's say that we're doing printing, you need somebody to sweep the floor and to mop up and to empty the trash barrels and do all those mundane tasks that you have that really don't require any expertise. I would say there's an opportunity for a man that's doing 3 months, 6 months, 8 months to work. But if you're going to look for a journeyman printer, you certainly aren't going to turn one out if the guy's only got a 3 month sentence. But I think, in terms of a good offset, man, if you're looking at a two year sentence, you got a good offset, man.
Well, I think in something like this, there should be some type of program that's at least thought of or studied a little bit. Because here, you're giving them a chance to buy a
We talked about working rather than cash. Cash getting, if you can't drive a cash getting there, so that person, now you're talking about.
I know, I'm not sure.
They're talking about.
I'm talking about a lift,
forklift.
And the Madam Chairman's got the caddy there.
I will pass the buck to Mrs. Ostrowski because she's not here.
No, really, what I want to know, where would these people be working? Will they go outside the prison and work, or will they just be working inside the prison?
You know, when a man goes out, let's say that he can go to work for XYZ Corporation as a cat skinner, forklift operator, or whatever, he would then be going out on the work release statutes. This is for work inside the institution.
That's what I want to know. But most of it would be inside.
Yes.
Otherwise, I was wondering how would he like to get a job that would compete with the unemployed.
And I work there these people around.
I probably along with Mr. Osie, unfortunately very few other people around here, have gotten the image of a hard-nosed law and order freak. Now, to a certain extent that's probably true. I am in favor of a program like this. I think it's a very worthwhile thing. And I think Red made a comment about he didn't want to see some guy walk out of that jail with any money at the time when he finished serving his term. Well, darn it, whether we like it or not, that's one of the contributing factors to the recidivism rate, is that when that guy gets out on the street, we say, boy, you know, away you go, and we'll give you $20 to get you to downtown Fairbanks, but the guy doesn't have a job. It's very difficult for him to get a job because no one wants to hire a con. I don't mind seeing him have a little bit of money when he gets out of there to tide him over until he can get a job. He's got to eat, and he's going to go and crash somebody over the head, you know, if he doesn't have the money to eat on. So I think this is worthy of our real consideration.
Well, watch yourself, Mr. Mackey. You know how liberal you are.
Mr. Swanson,
he sure stepped out of character there, boy. Well, I think that some of the arguments have merit, Madam Chairman. I think that if we get somebody in jail that's a printer, we buy him the sophisticated machine and the plates, phase on away. He could run us off a few 50s now and then when they get in jail and they get in trouble. I think along that line the proposition has some merit.
We asked for that. Mr. Osie, I can't wait to hear you.
Skip me again. In these programs, for example, it's going to take room and space. I'm sort of thinking of a place to make signs. I have went through North Dakota where they made twine and they buy some place to go. And this is a big operation. And so it's going to take Gilead. You know, I've been through Eagle River and there isn't the space there. No, they have one spot where they have vocational, and that is used up with welding and various. But you start getting in things of this magnitude, they're going to have to be permanent. They're receptors. You can't be changing each thing. And again, as I read this, why it's more or less for the individual things they're going to do. That's the reason I see a program built up. Just read what they do plan, because here we have, at least we know idea to follow what they're going to do, whether it's going to be making license-based science or
I understand the way this operation in this building works, and I'm not sure if the commissioner wanted to go ahead and put in a big building to have a twine factory, he'd have to come to us with the money. So we still have that fiscal control over whatever their program is on.
I guess I'd better stay on Health and Social Services.
Mr. Farley, this is
Madam Chairman, I have any idea Ms. Adams has about what kind of plant to use license plates. There's been a lot of talk about it, but I can remember last year when I was on the Bicentennial Commission, we were trying to arrange to get Bicentennial license plates. The state was getting them from outside the state somewhere. They had to give a lead time of something like a year or some stupid figure. And it didn't take that big a plant. It might be a good idea to make our own license plates. They're much more useful and probably much more cheaper.
I think that's, I would be using the word liberal. I don't think this has anything to do
you ever go in, don't put them in the accounting arena. His calculations are wrong. But the thing is if you were to keep that man in prison for 10 years and you were out for 6 months, and the damage that can be done in 6 months, if he's back in again for another 10 years, the cost of keeping one person in there probably would exceed the cost of what this program is going to be. As I remember, some of the figures we had, what it costs to keep a man in prison, they're just fantastic. The cost and then what kind of damage can be done to society if that rehabilitation and given some sort of a work assignment and a self-image. Just one or two people can make a whole difference. I wish we could get some more breakdowns. We've done some pretty good breakdowns on what it costs society for a person who is a chronic offender and in and out of prison.
My point is this. You talk about funding on this, and I'm sure that with this bill in here now, there's a little chunk of money set aside somewhere in the budget. Is that not
fairly true? Our intent was, or at least my intent was, the way to approach this, it might answer Mr. Osi's question, was that we do have space in some of the facilities. As I mentioned, at camp and at Eagle River, we've got the shop building. And my feeling would be, to go out and to find a product that we can manufacture, produce, change, build, assemble, whatever, that would fit within the existing facilities that we have right now without any major expenses. Give it a period of a year. Let's try it. Let's see what happens in terms of whether it's printing, whether we're making toothpicks, whatever it is, or we're putting together picnic tables or cutting wood that we're selling to the campgrounds. Let's give it a try and see how it works before we go into any major capital construction monies. Those are going to have to be, come out of the legislature here, and I think they should only be appropriated if there is a system developed to reimburse or to pay off any type of capital investment, so that we're not going out and just spending money. But it should be the idea that it's got to pay for itself. Now, you talk about printing, it's going to take a major investment. We've been working with the Department of Administration. They'd like to get out of the printing business, as I understand it, up in Anchorage right now. We have a member of our staff who's well experienced in the printing business, has been doing this, but that was his occupation before joining correction, is available. And what we suggested was, move the operation out to Eagle River. Then by attrition, as state employees leave, let's train inmates to fill in those jobs. We're not disrupting any state employees. We're taking over a function that the state is having difficult performing up in that area, recruiting people to handle. At the same time, we build in industries into the institution. But right now, I wouldn't dare do it without the authorization and having a law to say, how are the products going to be handled? How are you going to handle that money? Because we'd be in court very quickly, I'm sure, without the authorization. Now, we've cut wood for state agencies. We've cleared trails. We've fought fires. We've done all those things for state agencies. And I think that's a good and a valuable service that we can perform. And I think we should continue. And, what I'm trying to do is this. I think with this to say, let's formalize it and put it in this kind of perspective. I would think it'd be a terrible mistake for me to come or for the legislature to appropriate $5 million to build six, plants to build furniture or manufacture shoes at this point. Well, we have no idea in terms of how it's going to go. And I would see it starting off very small, let's say bring in the print shop. We may want to go up to camp and start making picnic tables or outhouses or whatever they need in the parks area. And let's do it on a very small scale, see if it is beneficial, see if it does work. There's no major investment for the state at that point.
Mr. Olson.
I have one recommendation at the conference. And you might have it, but say that back there.
There's no place.
That makes sense, and as you say, one of the best deals. It doesn't cost much. Materials,
big ones, these.
I understand that I made a mistake here, in one place in that fashion.
That takes, take care of your kids and cabinets.
We got an industry, put in Mr. Hadley.
What do you have of it, 'cause I do know the sawmill we have up there, they cut the boards, they're covered up.
Well, I know of one other state where they, where one of the big products is bricks, and another one where they have cement, make cement culverts and what have you for the highway department that they use.
Mr. Vernon, you, I have a question about various recycling activities, and apparently, one reason that they aren't starting the last is because the cost of, are relatively prohibitive. But what would be the role of something of this nature, where we're putting out the money anyway, you know, but my goodness, there must be a lot of recycling things that could be done.
Yeah, I remember when I was back east, that we were looking at the possibility of getting a car crusher. You know, we were running the industry and been doing a lot of that. And the problem we ran into, because the prison was located in a town inside the area, that we couldn't get a release from, because at that point, you had to burn all the things that were inside the car, and you couldn't get a release from the community in terms of burning the interiors, so that way you could crush them. But here's a, you know, here's a, just drive up and down the street and see what needs to be crushed up.
No, that was the only thing I would say. I was sure that Mr. Adams or anyone else in that operating that program would seek as far as possible to produce things that now the state is employing. So this immediately avoids problems with local manufacturing, at least to avoid problems at the middle country, and avoids labor union problems because they not make them anyway. I'm sure it'd be one of the first things you'd be looking for, things which are now that way you would not have not be entering any competition with local unions or business.
I've got a great one. You know how they send all these reindeer horns over to Japan to be made in Aphrodisia? Why don't you have them make a fair and send our product to Japan? You know? Then we would have so many ships coming in out of our port. We don't spend that much money. We can ask more money for it.
If it works, we'd have probably conjugal visiting institutions.
There's a lot of dust in the air.
Mr. Ossie?
Yeah, invitation was good.
Sorry. Where's the newspaper report?
The point I should have made is I'm not going to vote for anything that requires
Oh, yes, you are.
And I did it last year. And, you know, if there's one thing
about it, I'm fine. Well, Rick, even though it's what you will do, you'll vote as long as we take out